Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning, and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 24th. How are we doing this morning? Hope you're on your way to a tee time and that you've been hitting the ball great so far this season. Would love to hear from you. Follow me on Twitter at Ann Liguori or LinkedIn or Instagram at The Ann Liguori. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. Lots to talk about, as always, in this hour. A little later in the show, I'm happy to share a conversation I had with the LPGA Commissioner, Molly Marcoux-Simon. She took the helm at the LPGA Tour in August 2021. Mike Wann, who transformed the LPGA in the 11 years he was commissioner, he became the CEO of the USGA last July, as you know. Wann and Simon, they've been working together for weeks in the early going to ensure a seamless transition. And it looks like Molly is off and running. I love her history. Before taking the LPGA commissioner's job, Molly was the athletic director at Princeton University from, 2014 to 2021. She played hockey and soccer there. She graduated there in 91. And she was telling me she wrote her senior thesis on the social construction of sport and gender, a history of women's golf from 1895 to 1955. How perfect is that? And I really think she brings a unique perspective of running over 24 teams at Princeton University. And during her tenure there, Princeton teams won a league-leading 65 Ivy League championships. And I love to hear that she is a five-time club champion at the North Fork Country Club. So I think you'll enjoy getting to know Molly Marcoux-Simon, the commissioner of the LPGA. That interview will be coming your way at about 7:40. And we'll first connect with Jeff Shackelford, longtime golf writer. You've seen him on the Golf Channel. He writes a newsletter called The Quadrilateral. And we're going to talk about a lot of different topics. For one, the Saudi Golf League, or some form of it, has remained a constant in golf news for almost 2 years, maybe even over 2 years. Greg Norman has been leading the effort since last year and has reported $3 billion to work with. The league has 8 tournaments on its schedule, guaranteed money, lots of it for the players, to the tune of a reported $255 million. And this past week, veteran PGA Tour player Robert Garrigues has actually requested a release from the PGA Tour to play in what they're calling now the LIV Golf Invitational. It's June 9th through the 11th at the Centurion Club outside of London. He's not the only one, and not sure if the PGA Tour will even make public whether they'll let him play or not. We may just know based on his showing up at that tournament to play. But when you look at the history of breakaway tours, this is certainly not the first time for a breakaway tour. I mean, way back in 1967, the PGA Tour itself came into existence after players split from the PGA of America to form the Tournament Players Division. And then back in the 90s, Rupert Murdoch and Greg Norman, they tried to put together the World Golf Tour featuring top players competing in an 8-event series. But the PGA Tour under then-Commissioner Tim Fincham squashed that idea. And then, of course, in the fall of 2019, these two entities came about, the Premier Golf League and the other Saudi-backed tour. So that LIV Golf Tour was founded in 2021, and Norman was named the CEO last October. So apparently the first of 8 tournaments will take place on June 9th, and they announced the other sites that will host these tournaments in the United States, and they include Pumpkin Ridge Golf Club in Portland in July, Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey, end of July, the International in Boston in September, and Rich Harvest Farms in Chicago in mid-September. So you've heard players speak against this for a while now. Months ago, Rory McIlroy, he spoke out against the Super League. Lee Westwood said that at this stage in his career, it would be a no-brainer for him, Lee Westwood, to play in these big money events. So Lee Westwood has been rumored to be on the list of those who might play. And Adam Scott apparently confirmed he was in talks to join the tour as well. Dustin Johnson described the league as a really good concept in February, but he and Bryson DeChambeau ended up committing to the PGA Tour. And of course, Phil Mickelson talked at length about it to a writer who is coming out with a biography on Phil soon, even saying he and several lawyers helped write the league's operating agreement. Phil said that the threat of the league has given players leverage to get more from the PGA Tour. And of course, that got him in trouble, and he later issued somewhat of an apology. And we haven't heard from Phil since. I mean, the biggest question in golf is, where is Phil Mickelson? What do I think of this Saudi finance tour? Well, I'm completely against any sport that is funded by a country that commits atrocious human rights violations. And it's as simple as that. End of story. But it's not going away. And some other news about Greg Norman. According to Sky Sports, he's considering coming out of retirement to play at the Open in St. Andrews in July. Now, Norman is 67. He won the Open in 1986 and 1993 and last played professionally 10 years ago. Now, he'd have to earn his spot through qualifying unless he's given a special exemption. And according to a report I read in GolfChannel.com, a spokesman for Greg Norman said he does not plan to attempt to qualify for the Open, but will instead submit a request for a special exemption. So we'll see if that happens. In other news, another edition of Turner Sports The Match. It's been scheduled for June 1 in Vegas, featuring four active NFL quarterbacks. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers will play Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen in what's going to be a 12-hole event at the Wynn Golf Club at Wynn Las Vegas. I love these kind of matches. Some of you might not like it, but I mean, obviously some matches are more entertaining than others. You need guys who are funny, not afraid to trash talk. And it's hard when you're playing golf, especially when you're not a professional golfer, and you're trying to focus on hitting golf shots like these four quarterbacks are going to do. And, you know, how are they going to be funny? They're not really that funny to begin with. So they'll probably have somebody like Charles Barkley and some other guys who like to joke around, try to get the laughs. Otherwise, I don't think these four quarterbacks will have that much to say. It will be more of a battle of egos on the golf course than it might be a battle of words and verbal assaults. But it should be fun to watch. Brady and Rodgers played against each other last summer in the match. Rodgers and his partner, Bryson DeChambeau, defeated Brady and Phil Mickelson. Brady also lost 2 years ago with Mickelson against Peyton Manning and Tiger Woods. So Brady is 0-2. In these matches, if you're keeping score. And Josh Allen played in the AT&T Pebble Beach tourney this year, but he did not make the cut. So I'll ask our talented engineer, Ed Arzuman, who of these four quarterbacks, Ed, do you think has the best handicap?
Oof.
Take a guess.
that's a tough one there. Are we talking what they're saying is their handicap or what they're actually going to go out there and do?
Good point. Good point.
Because if we're going off what they're saying, maybe I'll go with, Aaron Rodgers. But actually have a weird feeling that when it's all said and done, we're going to be looking at Josh Allen and saying, wow, this guy's actually really good. You know.
So you'll watch this. This is a match that you will watch.
Yeah, I'll be tuned in. I'll have it on one of the TVs I got going or one of the screens that I got going for sure. And if it gets real good, it's gonna have all my attention.
Well, the recorded handicaps, you're right. Aaron Rodgers is the best golfer with a 4.6. Mahomes carries a 7.7 handicap. Ooh. Tom Brady, 8.1. And Josh Allen is 9.0. So Rodgers clearly with the best game at this point. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. I don't know how funny these guys are going to be while they focus on their golf games and their egos. But hopefully the commentators will make it fun. And speaking of celebrity golf, the Club Core Classic, it's a PGA Tour Champions event. It's taking place at Las Colinas Country Club in Irving, Texas. We talked about it a little bit last week. Stephen Alker shot a 66 yesterday at 8-under for the championship. Alker's two shots ahead of Lee Jansen and Jerry Kelly. Kelly had a hole-in-one on Friday. And the tournament features 50 celebrities playing alongside the pros. And Tony Romo is leading the celebrity division. And they're scoring that division using Stableford points. And Romo, I got to tell you, he has a really good-looking swing. Very fluid. He has 72 points overall right now. He leads tennis star Marty Fish by 3 points. Marty Fish says he doesn't play much golf, but my, he plays a really great game of golf. Marty Fish seems always to be in contention. Annika Sorenstam, only the greatest player, female player to ever play, tied for third. Now, she looked really good yesterday. I love watching her play with the guys. If she putts better today, watch out Tony Romo. That could go down to a really great matchup later this afternoon. And looking to see how Corey Pavin is doing. He was on the show last Sunday. Corey shot even par yesterday. He joins a bunch of guys tied for 30th. Mark Calcavecchia made his 1,000th start when he teed it up at the Club Core Classic this week. He made his debut on the tour 40 years ago. Calc won the 89 Open Championship. He said his last Open actually will be at St. Andrews in July. And some other news on the Champions Tour. Noda Begay told PGAtour.com that he plans to compete on the PGA Tour Champions starting in October after he turns 50. You all know Begay, the on-course reporter and analyst for the Golf Channel and NBC. He talks a lot about Tiger as they were teammates at Stanford back in the mid-90s. So the PGA Tour is in New Orleans. The Zurich Classic match play event, they play four ball, best ball in the first and third rounds, alternate shot in the second and fourth round. So today will be alternate shot. And I got to tell you, the team of Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, they're lighting it up. Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele. They lead by five at 29 under. Their 187 total set a new 54-hole tournament record since the Zurich Classic became a team event back in 2017, and they've led from the start, and their five-shot lead is the largest after 54 holes in tournament history. The South African team of Garrick Higo and Brandon Grace are in second place, five shots back. So, yeah, it makes sense. Cantlay was the 2021 FedEx Cup champion, PGA Tour Player of the Year. He's looking for his seventh PGA Tour win. Schauffele's looking for his fifth win, but he has not won since the 2019 Century Tournament of Champions. So they're all play alternate shot today to finish it out, and it's a very difficult format. It's tough to get a rhythm going when you're alternating shots with your partner, but these guys are the best players in the world, so they figured it out. And the team of Colin Morikawa and Victor Hovland saw highly touted before this started because Morikawa is ranked number two in the world, and Hovland's ranked fifth in the world, the highest-ranking team coming into this event. They're tied for 28th at 16 under. Some cool stories coming out of there, one being 68-year-old Jay Haas. He broke a record Sam Snead held for over 40 years. Jay Haas became the oldest player to make a cut. He's playing with his son, Bill. Jay had to make a four-footer on the 18th hole to make the cut on Friday. Talk about nerves. But he did it. He shot a 1-under-71. And at 8-under for the tournament, he made the cut on the number. Good for Jay Haas. Really great guy. He came on the show last season. Just one of the nicest guys. And the LPGA Tour is in Los Angeles. The LA Open. They're playing at beautiful Wilshire Country Club. And Nasa Hatioka grabbed a four-shot lead heading into this afternoon's final round. 23 years old, from Japan. She carded a 67 yesterday. Four of her five birdies were inside 15 feet. Wow, I'd love to play like that. Hannah Green is in second place after shooting a 2-under-69. All right, coming up, we're going to talk Saudi Golf League. We'll talk a little LPGA. We'll talk a little PGA Tour. And we'll talk about Phil Mickelson. Where is Phil Mickelson? With longtime golf writer Jeff Shackelford, publisher of the Quadrilateral.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori. And it is my pleasure to say hello to Jeff Shackelford, longtime golf writer with a newsletter covering the majors called The Quadrilateral. Jeff covers the golf industry and posts on his popular website as well, jeffshackelford.com. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. Good to be here.
Lots of topics in golf to discuss. And one subject that is not going away is the Saudi-funded golf league. And I understand that Robert Garrigues is the first PGA Tour player to seek permission from the PGA Tour event to play in these Saudi-funded events. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't think that's going to bring in a lot of eyeballs. He was struggling to get in some fall events status-wise. So this isn't exactly what you'd call a premium star and a premium get. And I personally think that this concept was built on by a different group of people. And it was a league concept. It was a little different way to present pro golf. But the main gist of it was to bring stars together. And like we saw at Harbortown just recently at the Heritage, we had a very good leaderboard of, you know, not mega stars, but we had Jordan Spieth, and we had a lot of players who people have gotten to know here a lot lately, Harold Varner. And so when you put those players together, people watch, and the ratings were a little bit better. And this idea of doing this league and not having stars, that somehow is going to make it work. And it to me just doesn't seem like a recipe for success, but they're trying everything to make this thing go, and they have the money behind them.
Well, if you're somebody like Robert Garrigues, who made apparently $162,000 this season, according to reports, this tournament will be worth $25 million, with the winner earning $4 million. So why wouldn't Garrigues or some of these guys like Garrigues want to make this kind of money?
Yeah, no question. And there are going to be some players, and I don't want to throw a name out because I want to pick on somebody, but they're, you know, older players in Europe who will play in the one in London. And I don't know, I don't blame them for doing that. Because the money's ridiculous. And the idea that Greg Norman floated recently was that, well, when other players see that these people they could easily beat are making a huge check, they'll want to play. And I, you know, it's just, they're kind of making it up as they go now at this point. So I don't think anybody will blame them, those journeymen for taking the easy money. But in terms of building something long-term, this is not the way to do it.
So Commissioner Jay Monahan was very adamant a couple weeks back at the Players' Championship. He basically said he's definitely banning anybody who plays on this Saudi league from the PGA Tour. And I know Greg Norman questioned the legality of that.
Yeah, that's something they have a very good lawyer they've brought in to analyze the language. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of a tussle back and forth on that. And so far, you know, the tour had a very good chance to draw the line on the Saudi event they played in January. They didn't. They gave everybody a release, which they kind of had to do. So I don't know how much it's a bluff and how much they can legally do that. And then the bigger question is just, are there sponsors and people around these players who are going to say, that's a good idea. Go take the check and make the tour mad. And I'm having a hard time seeing that. I mean, it may happen because the money's crazy. But I also, in the fine print, and the key here is, do the agents get a cut of this money? Because if they do, then you're going to have some agents convincing players to go play some of these events.
And I'm convinced that is the reason why this is still in the news, is because the agents really want this percentage and they can make a ton of cash. So Greg Norman recently said, Jeff, that they will start targeting journeymen and promising amateurs. So obviously it has totally changed from what was originally proposed.
Yeah, no, the original concept was, I think, very interesting. And obviously for the money perspective, they wanted to build franchises. Because there's so much money in having a franchise and the merchandising and the tax implications for rich guys and all that stuff. So, yeah, now they're going to throw out journeymen. And I couldn't believe the suggestion of amateurs. And, you know, that one's really taking an advantage of this mess of the name, image and likeness stuff and the USGA and RNA softening the rules on amateur status. So, In other times in the past, that might have been interesting, but amateur golf is kind of different now, where we don't really have a lot of household name amateurs. If you get really good at 18, 19, 20, you're now turning pro, especially on the women's side, but on the men's side too. So It is definitely not what the NCAA or the governing bodies had in mind. And we'll see if that even, if that really materializes. But, you know, they have a lot of money behind the man. They can, you just never know.
And could Greg Norman be more unpopular at this point? He's just relentless. He's not giving up, no matter how little support he seems to be getting from anybody.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you really kind of wonder, where a person who was so great at building well, he called himself the living brand, and who built this image and this great business, what the desire is to take this risk to the image and to his place in the game is. I think it's and also he's just not great at being out front. He says some strange things, and that kind of tends to backfire. And so I don't know how long the Saudi group can tolerate that, because they've hired a lot of very smart people. You know, people like Ron Cross that we've dealt with in golf, and Sean Bratches is their main person, and he's a almost became the head of ESPN several years ago and was involved in F1's great push. So they have quality people, and they've largely kept very quiet. And then you have Greg out there giving interviews and say, and you know, authorized by the group, but then he inevitably says something bad in every one of these interviews that does not make the situation better for them.
Well, I know Bubba Watson, Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood were rumored to be involved, but I don't know. Bubba put out a schedule for the next couple months, and it almost was as if he was rejecting that whole notion.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not very subtle of him. All he had to do was say the report was inaccurate, but instead he did the schedule. But it's Bubba. He does things a little bit differently. And yeah, those are the names we keep hearing. And again, the way it's structured now, it's not such a big deal. It's not like they're committing to this league, signing a contract and being part of a franchise. They're just probably going to play a few events, and they have a 8-event schedule, I believe it is, 7 events with a final event. Not particularly thrilling golf courses. And so we'll see how that plays out for those guys, because so many of these players now really value the importance of a golf course and where it fits on their schedule in preparation for the majors.
Jeff, the biggest question in golf, where is Phil Mickelson?
You know, Ann, I get this question a lot, and I apparently people confuse me with Woodward and Bernstein with a massive entourage of interns and my own travel via private jet to go just fly around the country and try to find Phil. I guess I could go down to Rancho Santa Fe and hang out outside his home, but I think that's a little creepy. So yeah, he's kept a very low profile. There was one rumor during the Masters. He turned up at a golf course in Atlanta, a very famous one, very private one, but not confirmed. And so, yeah, he's really gone into hiding. And of course he's the defending PGA champion. So it's about to get really weird, because that was a triumphant win last year. And it's kind of sad that it he may be not at Southern Hills in a few weeks to defend his title. And it's just bizarre.
Personal opinion. Do you think the PGA Tour banned Phil Mickelson?
I think he might have gotten a little bit of a suspension, maybe not for the reasons other people have mentioned, you know, and it's too layered and boring to go through, but this player impact program that he, at the end of the year, this bonus pool, I think he kind of tried to interfere with it a little bit, declaring himself the winner before they, and they really do tabulate all these ridiculous algorithms and things, and it goes into January and Tiger won it. And I think he might have actually been suspended over that, because I'm pretty sure to be involved in that program you had to sign something. We don't know that, but that would be my hunch, because you know, just the way Jay Monahan spoke, and you were there at the Players, I believe, and you heard what he said, and there were some, it was very interesting how he put it. It sounded like there was something where Phil, if he made a phone call, almost like an appeals process, things might have been different. So, but we just don't know. They don't share that information with us, as you know.
Pebble Beach, the USGA announced early this week, Jeff, will now host 4 future US Opens and 4 future US Women's Opens presented by ProMedica, including the first one next year. That's a huge announcement to make this big of a commitment to one venue. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, they've been doing this with Oakmont and Pinehurst, and I have mixed feelings. Obviously, when you're talking about Pebble Beach, it's our St. Andrews, and when the U.S. Open's there, it's one of those bucket list events that I always tell people, if you can go to a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, or the Women's Open or the U.S. Amateur, which unfortunately is not in this announcement, but has been a big part of Pebble's history as well. Go. It's just it's a special experience. And so, you know, the Women's Open next year will be fantastic. And it's the one course we see every year during the Pro-Am, but we don't mind seeing it again in the summer because it plays so differently. I guess the downside to me is that, you know, they're really going to just a smaller group of venues. They're great venues, but I do think the U.S. Open and, you know, the PGA too, they benefit from these occasional places like going to Marion or this year at the Country Club where they haven't been since 1988, or next year here in Los Angeles where I am at the Los Angeles Country Club. There's a different buzz when you go someplace you either haven't been in a while or that is kind of fresh and different. So that's the one kind of downside of this, I guess what you'd call it. It's the British Open version of it. It's a rota for the USGA now.
Speaking of Los Angeles, the LPGA is there at Wilshire Country Club. And I know you're most familiar with this venue. What a great venue for the women.
Yeah, I feel this is the best course they play all year. That's not one of the major venues. It's been, this is now the fourth playing here. Great club, nice people. They love the game. They welcome high school and college programs out. It's a normal country club, but they are, you know, just one of those places that's very involved in the game. And then they just have this great golf course. It's only 104 acres, but it's got so much character. And every year I hear from people back east, because this airs kind of in prime time on the Golf Channel. And, this time of year, it's very clear here. You get these beautiful shots of the Hollywood sign, which you see from the ninth tee. And there's an old El Royale hotel overlooking the course. You just feel like you're in kind of like LA Confidential. It's just the 50s LA it just screams, you know, that kind of heyday of Hollywood and this fascinating time. And it's in a beautiful neighborhood. And I just can't recommend it enough. And then of course, you know, good golf course, you just see different stuff from the women. You see different shots that you don't see on a lesser golf course, just like it is with the men. So I'm going to be out there again and looking forward to the final round.
The LPGA commissioner joins us this hour as well. And we were talking about just such great venues that the women now are able to play. So have you talked to any of the players? Are they psyched about really new venues, more prize money? It looks like the LPGA is really shining at this point. And I obviously more progress to go, but it's just great to see all these great venues for these women.
Well, it really is key. And I think it's, you know, I've written it a few times. The best thing that the USGA, the PGA of America and the RNA are doing is they're essentially leveraging these famous courses and saying, hey, if you want the big one, you also need to take a Women's Open. And more of these places are really enjoying almost more than the big open, the men's open, the women's, because they play the course a little more like it was intended to be designed. The women are, let's be honest, they're nicer to deal with. They have this wonderful international field, and they really appreciate when they come to these courses, because everybody, you just know, it just kind of raises the quality of the product and the cachet of events. So something like Wilshire's been really cool too for the LPGA Tour, because it's kind of sent a signal to some other really good golf courses around the country. Hey, it's cool to host the LPGA. And I know Wilshire's done really well with national memberships, and people have watched it and went, and, you know, people with money going, hey, when I'm in LA, that's the place I want to play golf. And so I just think it's vital to the LPGA Tour. I'm not sure if Mike Wan always treasured venues. I think he started to later in his commissionership. So it's, to me, it's huge to the success of the future of the tour.
And last question, Jeff, the Zurich Classic going on. Do you like that format?
I love that we have a team event. I have a real problem though, Ann, as you know, the alternate shot is a match play format, foursomes. It's very popular in the UK. The problem is in stroke play, when you use it, it is a very stressful, difficult format. And I would love to see a modified alternate shot where both players hit the tee shot and then they go from there. I just, I just feel like it's not conducive to stroke play. But all in all, I love that we have a team event. I'd love to see us have a mixed team event like we used to have as well. I think people are kind of crying out for that. And one of these days, they'll figure out a way to do it.
Jeff Shackelford, love your work. Love the ideas. Continued success. And thanks so much for joining us here on Talking Golf.
All right. Thank you, Ann.
Jeff Shackelford. Always love catching up with Jeff. Coming up, my conversation with the commissioner of the Ladies Professional Golf Association, Molly Marcoux-Simon. We'll get to know Molly, talk LPGA, preview the Founders Cup, which is coming up in Clifton, New Jersey at Upper Montclair Country Club, May 9th through May 15th, and lots more. So stay where you are.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Molly Marcoux-Simon, the commissioner of the LPGA. Welcome to Talking Golf, Molly.
Hi, Ann. Great to be here.
You are coming up on your one-year anniversary as the commissioner of the LPGA. I think it's May 25th, 2021. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. That was the date of the announcement. It did take me a little while to transition out of my Princeton Athletic Director job, and I started officially in August with the LPGA. But yes, I was remembering the May 25th, date, and thinking that it didn't feel like a year by any stretch.
So give us a status report. How has the first year been?
It's been awesome. I mean, it has been the busiest year of my life for sure. And I've had some busy years along the way, but, you know, moving the family down to Florida with my husband and getting the kids in schools and new programs and then taking on this very, large job. And I think important job because I think we, you know, have the opportunity to really make a difference in the world through our platform. And it's a really complex organization. So I've been really just learning a ton, trying to have some impact and sort of set the strategy for the future. But it's been really exciting. I've found myself in certain moments where I'm like, well, you know, where am I and how did I arrive here? This is pretty awesome being able to play golf with different people and meet different people in the game. And I know there are a lot of those things coming up in this year as well. So yeah, it's been awesome.
So you came into this position as the athletic director of Princeton University from 2014 to 2021. And I understand you played hockey and soccer there and graduated from Princeton. And I just was wondering, how did your experiences there prepare you for this job with the LPGA?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, I always have worked in sports and have a very large passion for sports and for the impact that sports can have on people and on communities and on society at large. But I've also always run sort of complex organizations, and I think everyone's gotten slightly more complex as time has gone on. But I think, you know, with Princeton having 37 teams and sort of the way that the athletics integrate with the rest of the university is a complex job and required a lot of, you know, sort of 7 day a week work like this job does, and great athletes that we were serving. And that's the really similarity, is that every day waking up figuring out how you can help various athletes live their dreams through the sport and achieve their goals and reach peak performance. And you do that in lots of different ways. So very similar, actually, very similar types of people that I really have the pleasure of working with, and a similar speed. But the LPGA has definitely taken me for a little bit more of a run here.
Well, I know you're following in the footsteps of the dynamic Mike Wan, who served as the LPGA commissioner for 11 years before taking over as the CEO of the United States Golf Association last July. Now, as you know, Mike is an agent of change. And during his tenure, the LPGA Tour went from a 24-event schedule to 34 events around the globe. Purses increased from $41.4 million to $76.5 million. And I'm sure there has to be a lot of pressure and expectation on you, Molly, to continue that good fight for the LPGA.
Yes, it's not a very smart move to follow someone like Mike. You know, you really, you want to follow someone that wasn't doing so well. But no, there is a lot of pressure because, you know, he cared deeply about the organization and put his whole heart and soul into it. And that's the way that I like to work. And I think a lot of the fun part about it is I think a lot of the things that he kind of thinks towards, like how you run an organization, the culture of an organization, I think his energy is pretty similar to kind of how I look at things. So it hasn't been a difficult transition. It's not like you have to go in and really change a culture or, you know, that foundation is very strong. I think we just get to build upon it and kind of take the baton and run with it. And Mike himself has been, you know, a phenomenal kind of mentor and partner in this. Anytime I call, he calls right back or, you know, gives me really good insight and, you know, doesn't have any ego around it, just wants to help us continue to grow. So it's a great situation because you get to, I think there's still lots of room for growth and we're by no means done. And he would be the first one to say that, but he laid a very, very strong foundation.
And I know with your background and knowledge, you are an advocate of all women's sports. And, you know, we've seen the dismal statistics that women's sports attract a very, very low percentage of the overall sponsorship market. And I've seen statistics that women's sports attract as low as what, less than 1% of the overall sponsorship market? I mean, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, I mean, again, the statistic is probably, the actual number is debated, but it's, I think we all agree it's under 10%. Whatever the number is, it's certainly under 10%. So, you know, while that is kind of dismal, I do look at it like an opportunity, there's an opportunity there. You know, I always say there's a lot between 10% and 90%, even if the number is 10%. So we have a huge opportunity to continue to grow our partnerships and grow revenues for the organization to continue to pour that back into our athletes, to be honest. I mean, that's the beauty of the LPGA is really, you know, the dollars that come into us, we reinvest directly either through the purses, which is the dollars going directly to the players, or through the infrastructure that allows us to continue to grow. And then again, reinvest in them. So yeah, there's a lot of room for growth, but I think people are really waking up to this idea that the women athletes are extremely engaging. They're extremely talented, particularly our women golfers. We've been looking at the statistics, comparing the women's statistics versus the men's statistics, and we're about to release some of those. And they're quite fascinating in terms of, you know, how our players do tee to green, how their putting is compared to the PGA Tour putters. And I think people will be pretty surprised about how talented our women are. So there's huge interest there. I think companies are also saying, listen, like by investing in women's sports, investing in women's golf, we can talk about our own values and our own commitment to women's leadership, women's empowerment, our DE&I initiatives. So all of that is really coming together to grow the interest in the LPGA and women's sports more broadly. And we're looking forward to capitalizing on that and, you know, changing those statistics.
Definitely. I know there's been a lot of improvement in research that I looked into between 2013 and 2017. The number of women's sports sponsorship deals increased by 47%. And I also saw that, you know, fans of women's sports, they say, are more fluid fans, meaning they are primarily consuming sports through digital and tech. And that's certainly the present and the future. So there's all kinds of research out there. And then one other one that I read, Molly, is there's a case study out there showing, for example, that the WNBA fans were 3.4 times more loyal to Nike than sports fans in general after Nike sponsored the WNBA. So when you're talking about women's sports, you're really talking about fan loyalty, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And association of values. You know, I think there's so much more of that with fandom. You know, people want to support organizations and corporations that they believe share their values. And so when a company comes forward and says, listen, we care about creating equity, we care about women's sports, we see the value in these athletes who are extremely talented and work just as hard or harder to hone their craft. And so I think that there is a tremendous amount of loyalty towards those corporate partners. And also, like you said, I think really the issue with women's sports has not been that the athletes aren't talented or people don't want to watch them and follow them. It's that they just haven't been on TV. And TV was really the only way that you could see these athletes. Now, with all the different technology, all the different media, people have an opportunity to get to know female athletes. There's also just a lot of research going on right now that says, you know, when you pair the men's sport with the women's sport, the fans tend to engage more with the women's sports. I mean, look at the Olympics, the last couple of Olympics. I think the athletes that were most followed and that people engaged with the most were female athletes. And that was because they had a very similar platform and were showed the same amount. So I think people are really waking up to that, to say, hey, if we put it on TV, we put it on the right forms of media, people will engage, they'll feel more loyal. And that's all really benefiting us and all women's sports properties.
Now, the first major on the LPGA Tour calendar is in the books, the Chevron Championship. And that major formerly, the Dinosaur, as I remember it, and then the A&A Inspiration. It's sadly leaving the desert in Rancho Mirage, California. Mission Hills had been its home for 51 years, and no more jumping into Poppy's Pond and all that amazing tradition. It must be difficult just to experience all that. I know attendance had decreased through the years. Chevron raised the purse 60% to $5 million, which is incredible. And they want to move the major to Houston next year, so it doesn't compete with the Augusta National Women's Amateur. But how difficult was this for you? Do you think this maybe was one of your more difficult situations in your first year?
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, I think that it was difficult just because the history of the LPGA is so important. And when you look back in the 71 years of the LPGA history, they really broke down a lot of barriers and did amazing things. And there are great stories from, you know, times when women weren't playing sports at all, and women on the LPGA were actually succeeding at a high level and inspiring people. So I think the history is extremely important. But I think, you know, listen, Dinah Shore and David Foster, when they started this tournament, they were innovators and they were people who were growing the LPGA and they cared about this. And moving, you know, being partnering with Chevron is an opportunity for us to keep growing. You know, we need to be on network TV, you know, as you said, moving the date to a date that worked the best for all of us, and that actually there was a TV window available was a big part of that. Growing the purse, you know, growing the fan base, you know, connecting with a very large audience, all those things were really important. So I think we were sad to lose that tradition there. And it was an amazing event a couple of weeks ago, and fans came out like they haven't in a long time. And there was tremendous energy. But I think that Dinah and David would like us to, you know, in their memory, keep growing and keep improving and keep moving into the next, you know, the next era for women's golf and for the LPGA. So a hard decision because of the history, but the right thing to do for the tour. Absolutely.
And thank goodness for the Chevron. I mean, it sounds like the purse is incredible. As I say, it's going to get to 5 million. All these purses seem like they're really increasing. The U.S. Women's Open is doubling their prize money to 10 million, 1.8 million to the women, to the winner. It just seems like it's happening pretty quickly. It was stagnant for many years, I thought, Molly, as far as progress goes. But it just seems like in the last couple of years, we're seeing some steady progress with prize money and coverage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, Chevron already went to 5 million and it's going to continue to grow. I think we had 12 or 13 tournaments increase their purse this year. So in 2019, we were just over 70 million, and we're already at 90.3 million this year. So it's close to a 30% increase. And, you know, I don't quote me on it, but I think there'll be some continued increases even for 2022. So, you know, it's amazing. That's a significant difference. And when you think about that growth, that's just on the purses. There is additional commitment from our partners on running the events to kind of like Chevron. They've already improved the quality of the event so significantly just through the partnership. And they're investing in our foundation. They're investing in building our fan base. They're investing really importantly in the player experience. So, you know, they reinstituted, you know, courtesy cars. They, you know, there's many things that really matter to our players to allow them to reach their peak performance. You know, it's hard being out on the tour. And when our partners can step up, which many of them do and have done, and make their life a little bit easier to get to the first tee, that just allows them to focus on their performance. And so I think it just continues to grow and grow and grow. It's been amazing from my seat to be able to see that. I've had some meetings where I walk into a partner's office for the first time, and he or she tells me they're increasing the purse. I was like, well, that was the easiest thing I've ever had to do, you know? And so I think that's been really fun. And people are seeing the value of women and kind of the differences in pay right now, and how, you know, at certain purse levels, when our players go and they make the cut on a tournament, they actually lose money for the week. And I think a lot of partners are going, okay, that's just not right. These are the very best athletes in the world, the very best golfers in the world, not in the US, not in, you know, in a certain region of the world, but in the whole world. And they should be compensated commensurate with that talent. And so it's been fun to see. And, you know, again, from our, where we sit, the money goes, when we get these increases from partners, the money goes right to the players. And that's very different than almost all professional sports leagues. And I'm really proud of that.
Molly, let's talk about the Founders Cup. It's coming up in Clifton, New Jersey at Upper Montclair Country Club, May 11th through the 15th. What a great idea, paying tribute to the 13 founding members of the LPGA.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome tournament. And again, you talked about Mike before, and I think he and the team were sort of visionaries, and they went out on the, you know, similar to the Founders. They took a chance and they said, let's run this event. The first year, the players agreed to play for no purse. And which in them, you know, that's a remarkable thing for professional athletes to do. And this was only 2011. So it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, I think Mike and the team saw this as an opportunity to really tell the world about the history of the LPGA. I wrote my senior thesis at Princeton on the history of women's golf from 1890 kind of up to the beginning of the LPGA. And so for me, you know, just being a student of the game and the role that the LPGA has played in society, and how, you know, the way that the LPGA has operated reflects the way women have been viewed in society. And so it, for me, it's a really, really fun tournament. We get to honor these 13 amazing pioneers. We also are founders. We also bring back the next group of women who kind of came after the founders, and we call them the pioneers, and we honor them each year. And we're also hoping to bring back a number of, I call them alums, but that's more from my college days, but, you know, former players, and have them be a part of the celebration. You know, very, very sadly, as you know, our amazing, amazing founder, Shirley Spork, who I just grew to adore in my, you know, 12 months being a part of the LPGA, just recently passed away very unexpectedly. She was 94. So some would say that wasn't unexpectedly, but we just saw her out at the Chevron Championship. I was able to tell her that we were inducting her and the remaining founders into the LPGA Hall of Fame. I was able to sit down with her for about 45 minutes to an hour and tell her that. And she was as sharp as any person I've ever met, and as strong as any person I'd ever met, and as interesting as any person I've ever met. So, you know, we were all just so saddened and continue to be saddened by that. But we know that her legacy will live on forever.
Right. What an incredible, inspirational woman. I talked about her last week, Shirley Spork. She was one of the 13 founding members of the LPGA, and she also created the LPGA Teaching and Club Pro Division, which now has over, 1,800 LPGA teaching professionals. And she continued to teach well into her 90s. And she'd be at the Founders Cup shaking hands with the players. And boy, what a loss. Well, Molly, I'm glad to hear that you're finding some time to play golf. I know you grew up playing as a youngster. And what's your handicap these days?
I don't know, because I'm playing in a lot of scrambles or shambles. I don't think I've played maybe one 18 hole round where I actually kept my score, but my game is getting better, I will say, because I get to play in the pro-ams with these remarkable women, and it really sets your tempo. And I pick up some things that I need to improve upon. So yeah, I'm getting better, and I really enjoy it. And it's been fun to, you know, sort of share that with the players too. It creates a really nice connection where I get to know them for a couple hours, you know, on a Wednesday. So I really enjoyed that.
Well, the LPGA has such an incredibly bright future, and you're a big part of that, Molly. Thanks so much for spending some time with me, and continued success.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for being such a big supporter. And we look forward to seeing you at many events coming up here.
All righty. Well, my thanks to Molly Marcusimal. Hope you enjoyed that interview, the commissioner of the LPGA. My thanks to golf writer Jeff Shackelford, to Ed, our Zoom in the studio. Great job as always, Ed.
Talking Golf with Anne LaGoria is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. Hey, can Annika Sorenstam beat Tony Romo in the celebrity division of the Club Tour Classic? How about Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele? Will they continue to light it up? It's the alternate shot format today in the final round at the Zurich Classic. And can Nasta Hatioka maintain her decisive lead to win the LPGA LA Open? Enjoy the golf, everybody. Stay tuned for Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge, and talk with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Anne LaGoria.